Rightio, here we go. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome to CCNA Discovery 1, Chapter 6, Network Services, with Elise and Jackie on behalf of the Cisco Academy for the Vision Impaired. Here's the magical one. How are you going, Jay?
Oh, I bet you know. I bet nobody's going to put money on this one.
No.
If I was any better, I'd have to be twins, and the world couldn't stand that or whatever.
Exactly, and just as well you're not, because you've done such a wonderful job on this lesson plan for today. We have changed it around a little bit for you all guys, and that's because of Jackie's really, really hard work. And she's been up toiling away this morning while I've been in bed doing this, so makes me feel a bit lazy. So we've got a pretty good lecture for you this afternoon. Are there any questions, folks, regarding any of the material from any of the previous chapters?
Come on, guys, it's your golden opportunity.
Oh, well, they're either bamboozled, confused, or they've learnt stuff. I know there's questions from some of the Chapter 5 module thing, too, that we've been working with. But everyone so far has done really good, and the quality work coming in has been absolutely fantastic. So enjoy. Now, this is the fourth last lecture we have. The course is still open until the end of January. However, I'm going on a holiday, as you all know, and we won't be presenting from America. We'll be off tripping around and enjoying ourselves. So, enjoy every moment you've got with us for the next 4 weeks, today and three others, because we certainly enjoy being with you. And also welcome to those people who are listening to us off the recording who can't make it off from other classes. So, welcome, and I hope you get something out of today. Are there any other comments for you, Jay?
Negative.
All right, let's get into it, folks. The introduction to the chapter. I think that was for me. It's not marked, so I'll just have to assume. Was that mine, Jay?
Yeah, the whole thing is up until the OSI model.
Right, okay, all right. Well, introduction to Chapter 6, Network Services. Pretty much the network, it says here that network, but any network is really facing new challenges and must face up to more demand than ever before. You know, videos, movies, television, all come streaming in over the internet these days, and the network and network services we have got to be able to cope with all of that. These days, we can connect to remote locations in ways never imagined before. You know, so much so that Lisa can go and talk to her best friend from a train on a little Optus dongle. So, you know, there's all sorts of strange things that you can connect to and from interesting locations, just as well, because there are some parts of the world that get quite remote. Not that the Glen Waverley train line is that remote, but nonetheless, it is an interesting place to hold a Skype conversation from anyway. Even small businesses these days can reach customers anytime and more often. And in this chapter, we are going to go through, or we'll guide you through the following. Compare and contrast compare and contrast clients and servers. Describe the type of interactions with internet applications. I'm getting tongue-tied today. That orange juice hasn't worked. Describe the purpose of a layered model. And some of you have heard me talk about this, and probably even Jackie as well, about the OSI model and even the TCP model. And you've probably seen it in your notes.
You forgot to put your vodka in your orange juice today.
Oh, I need the vodka. Is that what it is? Yeah, right. Okay, you're making me out to sound like a drunkard. It's drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning. There you go. 7 o'clock in the morning. Maybe we need the vodka, I don't know, keeps you warm.
If it works.
Illustrate the interaction of various protocols. Right, client service and their interaction. Basically, we use these services every day to perform routine tasks. Very rarely do we think about what goes into getting a message from point A to point B. We really never really think of the devices and servers and stuff that goes on to the way things happen. We just mic up and talk in Ventrilo. We just click the send button on an email and off it goes. But as you all know, being IT professionals and students, that there's quite a lot that goes on behind the scenes. So today is all about looking at some of that. Okay. The term server refers to a host or computer running an application software, offering services to other hosts. For example, an email server, for example, runs a program on there that collects the email and stores it for you and your email client to come by later on and either and pick off that email to read. A website is how it's done, a server, and I'm always explaining this to my clients, is what is hosting. Well, hosting is the term given to where your website lives, and the server and servers responsible for accommodating that website so that it can be delivered to the internet on demand. Okay, there's millions of servers connected to the internet, providing websites, email, and financial transactions. Oh, and also there's another bullet point here: music downloads. Yep, we all like those, and etc. All of these servers use agreed standards and protocols, and I think that's really cool, because if you had one talking one language and one talking another language, it would make communications very tricky, if not impossible. Are there any questions so far, gang?
All makes sense from here.
Yep, I thought for you it would, my dear. So, silence has got...
Same.
Yep, Joe, you've got a pretty good finger on the pulse, haven't you?
Yeah.
Right, Joe, then you can tell us what a client is.
Excuse me, a what?
A client.
A client? Oh, boy. Okay, put me on the spot, thank you, because my brain's not working. Okay, I think a client would be something like, my...
Oh, we lost you.
See what you did? You put him on the spot so bad he's not on the internet.
He'd run away. Oh, we've scared the students off already. Oh, come on, Joe. I know Joe has IP problems sometimes. Let's see if he's miking up. What's going on here? Sorry, Joe, for putting you on the spot. You're talking. Your green light is on, but we're not hearing your audio, so there's packet funnies, I think. All right. Can anybody who wants to step forward and put themselves on the spot tell us what a client is?
A client uses the services of a server, such as, for instance, Outlook Express is an email client, and IE8 is a web client. It uses it receives the material served up from the server and uses it on a single host.
Perfect. Yep. Basically, a computer application that accesses information held on a server. And the example here in notes is exactly that a web browser. The key characteristic of a client/server systems is that basically the client sends a request to the server and the server responds by carrying out that request. For this to happen, many protocols and rules are required. These protocols occur at different levels and govern the following: how devices connect to the network, e.g. media, how devices actually access the network, how they send data over the network, how connections between devices are initiated, connections between devices and the network are actually initiated, but there's obviously initiation that happens as well as transfer of data, how data is formatted and displayed, and the behavior of the specific applications being used. And we're going to be guided through a lot of that sort of stuff when we look at the layered models with Jackie in the next section. Welcome back, Joe. Sorry for putting you on the spot, old son. You crated. You okay now?
I think so.
Good. Okay, won't ask you too many hard questions in case your internet can't cope. We know you can cope, but we're a bit worried about your connection there.
Good, okay.
All right, where are we up to here? All right, now, as I said, Jackie's going to guide us through layered models. It is important to know, and it basically says here, each of these layers in the layered models, and in particular the OSI reference model, each of the functions that in the layers are sort of independent of each other, and it can help for a number of reasons, because it sets standards. It also guides us through when we're doing troubleshooting. We might be talking about an application layer problem, or we might be talking about a lower layer problem, and it sort of helps in the process of troubleshooting. So, are there any questions with what I've said so far? The magical one, it's your turn.
All right. To be truthful with you, I think that we have covered layered models entirely too late in this course. And I swore when we got started,
yep,
if we ever do this again, I really do think that we're going to start off teaching this stuff like early, because it makes it so much easier to think in terms of layers. It really does. In order for successful communication to occur over the network, there has to be interaction between several different protocols. And these protocols are implemented in both the software and the hardware that's loaded on each host and on each network device. And this interaction can be thought of as what's called a protocol stack. Think of a stack of, like, plates in your cupboard, for example. The lower layers of the stack are concerned with moving data over the network and providing services to the upper layers. And the upper layers are concerned more with the content of the message being sent, as well as the user interface. Okay. Right now, there's a diagram that's showing a web server and the primary protocols that are used in order to provide services, web services, to a client. And so what happens is that the protocol HTTP, or Hypertext Transfer Protocol, which, as you all know, is used to display web pages and stuff, is located at the top of the stack. Next down is something called Transmission Control Protocol, or TCP. Next down is Internet Protocol, or IP. And on the bottom layer is Ethernet Protocol. So you can see that it's good to think in terms of layers, because layers can be associated with different protocols. These protocols function at these various layers. Obviously, in order to visualize these interactions between protocols, we use a layered model. It shows you the operation of the protocols that occur within each layer, as well as the interaction between the layers above and below a particular layer. This layered model, or layering of models, has many benefits, including they assist in protocol design, because protocols that operate at a specific layer have specific information that they act upon. It fosters competition, simply because products from different vendors can work together, because standards have been implemented for these various layers. And it prevents technology or capability changes in one layer from affecting those above or below. And it also provides a common networking language to describe networking functions and capabilities. The first layered model was actually created in the 1970s, and it's called the Internet model. It defines four different categories of functions that have to occur in order for communications to be successful. The architecture of the TCP/IP protocol follows this model, and it's therefore often referred to as the TCP/IP model. The actual name for it is the Internet model, but you'll hear it more often as not referred to as the TCP/IP model. And it consists of the following four layers. Layer 4 in the TCP/IP model is the application layer. And this consists of applications and processes that use the network. Layer 3 is the transport layer, and it provides, end-to-end delivery services. So it has to do with how data is delivered. Layer 2 is the Internet layer. It defines the datagram, which is, the packet or of data that's transmitted across the network, and it handles the routing of data also. And layer 1 is the network access layer. This processes, routines for accessing the physical media. The next layered model that we're going to deal with, and it's actually the more popular of the two, is called the Open Systems Interconnect, or OSI, model. This is a model that was developed by the International Standards Organization, or ISO, in 1984. It doesn't really talk about the interaction of any specific protocol, so it can be applied to any protocol or stack of protocols. It was created as an architecture for developers to follow in order to design protocols for network communications. It really is kind of the primary reference model for intercommunications. And it includes a lot of tasks associated with network communications, not just those related to the TCP/IP protocol. The OSI model has 7 layers, and a task or group of tasks is then assigned to one of those 7 OSI layers. The separation of these, you know, layers basically allows each of the layers to basically operate independently of each other. And this would, for example, make it possible for a laptop connected to a cable to access a website, as well as one connected wirelessly, as well as, for example, a web-enabled mobile phone to access a website. They can all access the same website, even though the devices that they're using, even though the way they connect to the network is very different. On the other hand, the lower layers, you know, the lower layers operate seamlessly in terms of the connectivity, and so does the application. The application doesn't really care unless there's something, you know, in the application like Big Flash or something that the web-enabled mobile phone, say, can't access. It doesn't care how that particular website is being accessed. And this is the advantage to layering. Also, it allows, you know, internet connections to function satisfactorily when a variety of applications, such as, you know, email, file download, IM, etc., are going at the same time. So, you know that you can access email and be on a website and, you know, be transferring a file or doing Skype or Ventrilo or whatever all at the same time. Does anybody have any questions about that so far? All right. Then let's talk about the 7 layers of the OSI model. And by the way, we can look at these models from what's called a top-down approach, or we can look at these models from what's called a bottom-up approach. The bottom has to do with the physical kinds of layers or the cabling, and the top has to do with the application. So at this point, I'm going to talk from top down.
Can I make an observation?
Yeah.
As Jackie talks about, guides us through from the top down, and maybe she might come also from the bottom up, think of it as you sending an email from your computer at the application layer. You're in front of your computer typing your email, you press the send button. It's going to go down and follow this route that Jackie's talking about and come back up the other end and be displayed on the user screen. You can think about that. Even if you listen to the chapter again and think about it, you know, in a different way, if you're listening to it on the second or third run, that's fine too.
Yeah, precisely. The mnemonic for the top-down approach is all people seem to need data processing. So, you know, the problem that I have with mnemonics is that I can remember the mnemonics and then I can't remember what the dadgum thing stands for, so that's a pit. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about these layers. The first layer is the same as with the TCP/IP. It's the application layer. And what this does is it provides standardized services such as like file transfer, email, etc. between systems. It supports application and end user processors. Things like quality of service is looked at. User authentication and privacy are considered. And any constraints on data syntax, in other words, can the particular program interact with the program on the other end? For example, you know, like Outlook and Thunderbird, are there any differences that need to be taken into account or whatever? Or, maybe a Mac and Windows, are there any differences that need to be taken into account? Obviously, because it's the application layer, it really has to do with, you know, things having to do with the application. And so everything at this layer is like application specific. The next layer is the presentation layer. And it standardizes data formats for use between different types of systems. In other words, even though I may send a message to Ian, and I have a Windows PC, and Ian has a Mac, he can still receive my message, okay? And part of this has to do with the presentation layer. The presentation layer encodes and decodes data. It can encrypt and decrypt it if the data is sent encrypted. It can compress and then decompress the data. And it allows for independence from differences in data representation. In other words, for example, with help from this layer, various file formats can be seen on a network that might not otherwise be able to be seen. So if, for example, a machine on the network was connected with Windows 98, which has a FAT32 file system, because of the network redirector and in part from help, you know, with the presentation layer, it can actually see NTFS files, whereas normally it wouldn't be able to do that. The presentation layer also transforms data into
that was layers 7 and 6.
That the application layer can accept. Yeah, this is layer 6. And it also formats and encrypts data to send
so
across a
the
network.
As we walk down there.
Another synonym for this is the syntax layer, but it's not used often. Layer 5 is the session layer. For those of you who know what printed letters look like, the letter S and the number 5 look somewhat similar, and so that's always been a mnemonic for me to help me remember the session layers number 5.
Yeah, it's cool.
It manages user sessions and dialogues. It maintains logical links between, you know, the computer, the systems. It establishes, manages, and terminates connections between applications. You know, you have to have connections in order for these things to occur, and this is where the session layer comes in. It sets up, coordinates connections and conversations between application. So that's your session layer. It has to do with, you know, establishing connections and communications. Sorry, my throat's a little bit scrapey this morning or this afternoon. Transport layer is layer
it's
number
catching,
4.
Isn't it?
This manages end-to-end message delivery over the network. You know, literally how data is transported. It provides reliable and sequential packet delivery through error and flow control mechanisms. It hopefully provides transparent transfer of data between systems. And it's also responsible for end-to-end error recovery and flow control. Often what will happen, folks, is that if data gets messed up along the transmission, you know, there are bytes in the packet to check for that. And if those bytes are, you know, it comes up as bad, that there has been an error in the data transmission, then, you know, the packets are resent. And this has to do with the transport layer. Another thing that it does is it ensures complete data transfer. Network layer is layer number 3. It routes packets according to unique network device addresses. So this is where your routing and stuff comes in, is at layer 3. Your router is here. It functions at this layer.
Stop plickens.
All right. It also provides like virtual circuits for transmitting data from, you know, node to node. So that sometimes what they call network switches can actually operate at this layer as well. But understand that this is where routers really come in. IP addressing is also found at this layer, or logical addressing. Inner networking is found at this layer. Error handling, congestion control, and packet sequencing. Now, the next layer is layer number 2, or the data link layer. And this basically defines procedure for operating communication links. It detects and corrects frame transmission errors. Now, remember we talked about frame being at the level 2 or layer 2. It's an Ethernet thing. And then, you know, we talked about layer 3 and 4 being segments. And so basically, you know, you get the Ethernet packet, and then it's encapsulated again with even more data at levels 3 and especially 4. So basically what you have is that we're talking about frame errors now, not...
At layer 2, we're talking about framing. And I've had this conversation with a couple of students this week on Skype, and I've often said, well, the information is inside the frame at the higher layer. So here we are at layer 2, and imagine the frame is around all this encapsulated information. Like the information inside the frame might be a picture of a tree, and you interpret the tree and you go, doesn't that look very nice? And you enjoy it, which is what routers and upper level things do. The lower level stuff just concerns itself with the framing, and you hang the picture frame on the wall.
At level 2, the data packets are encoded and decoded into the various bits that they contain. And it basically furnishes transmission control and management. It handles errors in the physical layer, like cabling, intermittent cabling or whatever. It also has to do with flow control, which, as you know, it regulates how much data is transmitted at one time over the network. We discussed this a little bit in Chapter 3, I believe. It also synchronizes frames, so it has to do with frame synchronization. There's actually two aspects to the data link layer. One of them is the media access control, or MAC layer, and the other is the logical link control, or LLC layer. The MAC layer controls how the computer actually gains access to the media, as well as this thing is doing some weird thing.
It's often hard when you have to read it, isn't it?
No, my arrow keys are acting weird. It controls how the computer actually gains access to the data, as well as, you know, permission to transmit it. So I should have used the word data, not media. And the LLC controls frame synchronization, flow control, and error checking. Physical layer is our last layer, and it defines the physical means by which data is sent, i.e.
layer 1.
Cabling, you know, fiber optics, wireless, etc., NICs, that kind of thing. That's the physical layer. It has to do with hardware, as you know. It talks about the the interface between network media and device. It defines optical, electrical, or mechanical characteristics. And it conveys the signal through the network at the electrical or mechanical level. Okay. Fast Ethernet and RS-232 are basically protocols associated with this. So if you have like a web server that's, you know, transmitting to a client, basically what you see is that the layer 1 would show, for example, the fast Ethernet port. Layer 2 would show the Ethernet or MAC addresses, okay? Layer 3 would show IP addresses, and layer 4 would show, you know, things like TC port numbers, which we'll discuss in a little bit. Okay. Protocols can be actually divided as follows. They can be application protocols, transport protocols, internetwork, and network access. There's a diagram, and it shows three rectangular boxes stacked on top of one another. The bottom box is an internetwork layer protocol, and inside the box it says IP. So IP is basically an internetwork layer protocol. The middle box represents transport layer protocols, and inside that is TCP and UDP, which we're going to discuss. The top box represents application layer protocols, and inside that top box is HTTP, FTP, DNS, SMTP, Telnet, and DHCP, which we're going to discuss. I'm just about at the end of this, but one of the things that I have to discuss before we go on to talk about the various kinds of protocols is port numbers. A bunch of services, you know, can be going over the internet at the same time. In other words, I can have my web browser open. I can be talking to you guys on Ventrilo. I might flip over to my email and check that while Elise is lecturing, for example, but still listening. So how does all that occur? Well, obviously, these services could be provided by a single server, but more likely, they're going to be provided by several servers. In either case, the server needs to know what type of service is being requested by a client, especially this is true if a server offers more than one type of service, which is entirely, you know, possible. Client requests can be identified, you know, as being like for email or web or whatever, because each service is made to a specific destination port. And there are destination ports that are well known and registered for each services. Ports are basically broken into three categories, and they range in numbers from 1 to 65,535. They're assigned by an organization called Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, and the abbreviation is ICANN. Isn't that cool? ICANN. The three categories of ports are as follows. The first is well-known ports. These are destination ports that are associated with common network applications. These ports are in the range of 1 to 1023. Registered ports are ports 1023 through 49,151. And these can be used as either source or destination ports. Organizations use these sometimes to register applications such as IM. And then we have private ports, which is 49152-65535. Okay. And these can be used by any applications. And they're often source ports. Okay, here's some well-known ports that you should be familiar with. 20 is FTP for data file transfer. 21 is FTP control file transfer, and it has to do with the connections and stuff. Usually you'll hear port 21 associated with FTP, and that is true for the connection aspects of it. Port 20 actually goes about sending the file. 23 is Telnet or a teletype network. This allows for an administrator to log on to a computer remotely and control it. 25 is SMTP, which is Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. Elise will be talking much more about these in this next section, actually. 53, port 53, is for Domain Name Services, or DNS. 67 is DHCP for the client. 68 is DHCP for the server. 69 is Trivial File Transfer, or TFTP. 80 is HTTP, or, you know, Hypertext Transfer Protocol. 110 is POP3, which is an email protocol, and Elise will be talking about that. 143 is IMAP4, and she'll be talking about that too. 161 is SNP, which is Simple Network Protocol. I can't even talk today. I didn't have my vodka either. SNMP, try saying that fast. It's Simple Network Management Protocol. Ugh. And 443, which is HTTPS, or Secure Network Protocol. You get this, for example, when you log on to Cisco. You know, you type in https://cisco.netacad.net, and it comes over port 443 instead of port 80. Anyway, I'm done unless somebody has any questions about that. I'm getting some water.
I think after all that, you definitely need it, girlfriend. You really do. Another port that often Terry and I like to mention is port 22, because SSH is also very similar to that of what goes on in port 23, which is Telnet. We can log in on a command line and control our Linux machines from that. Can also use GUI-based programs like WinSCP to access Linux servers. And a couple of people on channel here, namely Kylie and Jackie, will be familiar with accessing my server on port 9022, because I actually changed the port because port 22 is actually quite well known and can be scanned, and it's less likely that hackers are going to go looking for it on other ports. They can do, I'm not saying they won't, but you know, any level of security is better than
but by all means all. Tell somebody.
Telling people, oh, that's right, this is lecture. I forgot these lectures are open. Well, look, scan it if you want, Mr. Hacker, because you're not going to get in anyway. I'm running SE Linux now. So, you know, these are secure, but suffice it to say, you need to know the address too, which I'm not going to give you. that's why that happened. So, and we'll talk more about ports in other things too. I had to open up these ports on my router, as you would if you were going to. I'm serving a few small websites out here from home, and I had to open it so that port 80 would be allowed through. So, folks, at the moment, you can see ciscovision.org from here. And Kerry's managing QCAT.org over in Perth. So, are there any questions? Okay, no questions. That's scary. Sure, no one has any questions on this stuff.
While I was listening, to Jackie speak, and then you were like speaking over her. But I was hearing both of you speaking at the same time about different things. I'm wondering if that's my connection, if I should log out and then come back in.
Your ping times aren't good. Well, that's a collision, isn't it? But we do have a bit of latency. I'm running a ping time of 43 or 42. I think it's rated in milliseconds here. If you could draw the cursor up past the names, it will tell you. So it's probably a fraction higher than I'd like to see it here. I'm not sure what it would be there in the eastern part of the United States. So apologies for that. Well, you are getting latencies, Mario. Hey, Jay, what's the ping time for you?
245.
Well, that's not good. It seems that traffic in and out of the continent of Australia could be a bit dodgy. Just for curiosity's sake, what's it in New Zealand, Kylie?
Give me a minute.
You know, this is almost akin to us, Jackie and I, or radio hacks from the old days, and it's almost akin to, you know, sort of reminds me, what are the conditions like tonight? How are we going to listen on?
104.
Oh, that's not good.
How are we going to listen tonight
on 80
now.
Metres? All right, if it drops, just unless I should open a communications channel for you, Jackie, on the phone or something. If you want, we could do that, just to, you can let me know if it drops or something over there.
If it drops, it drops. I'll be back up.
All right, let's see how we can go. Let's rock it through this next section. So I'm going to just quickly ask any questions. All right, back to application protocols and services. And Jackie did mention that I'll be talking a lot about these emails and things. And we discussed this during the week. I've built some servers and have some email. You know, I've got email programs running here like XM, and there's another popular one called SendMail. Postfix, they're the client app. They're the server applications on the server that allow the server to do its email thingies. Apache is the application I run on my server to do the website thingies. So there you go. And obviously the Internet Explorer and Firefox, etc., are the things you use as a client to look at those websites. All right. Okay. Basically, thousands of services all over the internet are assigned to host and serve up the things we do on the internet. Okay, each of these services is assigned a unique IP address that identifies it on the local network to where it's connected. Yep, you know, you get a server farm full of servers, they've all got their own internal IP addresses, much like we have. Also, they have public IP addresses, of course, as you're aware. Okay, so it's going to be pretty impossible to remember all the IP addresses out there. Instead, there's an easier way of locating a server by associating a name with that server. This is known as the Domain Name System, or DNS. This provides a way for a host to use a name to request a service or a website from a known IP address, or the IP address of a specific server. Okay. DNS names are registered and organized on the internet within a specific high-level groups or domains. Okay, some of the higher-level domains, or the most common ones we're all familiar with, of course, are .com, .edu, .net, .org, etc. This is the highest level domain. In actual fact, for countries outside the United States, we have an even higher level, which is for New Zealand, NZ, Australia, AU, etc. In a DNS server, it contains a table that associates the names with with the IP addresses. When the client has a name of a web server, such as has the name of a web server, but needs to find the IP address, it sends a request to the DNS server on port 53. The client then uses the IP address provided by the DNS to figure out what website to visit. These notes have gone a bit funny here. My IRKs are doing strange things too. So basically it looks up in the DNS, goes, where is ciscovision.org, or lonsdomedia.com.au, or cisco.com, etc., and looks it up from the DNS and knows where to go. Okay, when a DNS server receives a request, it checks its table to determine the IP address associated with that web server. So someone's DNS somewhere, usually your internet service provider's DNS, will have all this information. And when you go looking up qcat.org, it looks up and it knows where to go. It knows where to send the requests to, which is whatever the IP address for the Association for the Blind. Now, if the local DNS doesn't have an entry for the given name, it then has to go off and query a DNS server within the domain. In other words, there will be something within the .au domain that will have this information. For us looking out from Australia, there will be something in the American in another level that will have this information as well. When the DNS server learns the IP address, that information is sent back to the client anyway. If the DNS server cannot determine the IP address, the request will time out and the website will not be displayed or the connection will be lost. Basically, client software such as your web browser and email program works with the DNS to obtain IP addresses in a way that is pretty much transparent to the user. So all this is going on to the user, and the user is simply not aware of it. But there's a lot of communications going on behind the scene. Are there any questions so far while I pour myself a bit more orange juice? Right, gold, silence is golden. Thank you, Tremolos, or Four Seasons, depending on what side of the pond you're on. The web server is probably the easiest one to talk about at the moment. A web client and service it's got here in the notes. When a web client receives the IP address of a service, that client browser uses that IP address on port 80 to request web services. It's pretty easy. This request is sent to the web server using the Hypertext Transfer Protocol, or HTTP, which is why you see that in the address bar. Okay, when a server receives this request on port 80, it responds accordingly and serves you up the website. And the web page is then displayed on the user's screen within the user's web browser. Okay, the information of this website is encoded using specialized markup languages. And can anyone tell me what this markup language might be called?
HTML.
Thank you, my dear. HTML, which stands for Hypertext Markup Language, because with HTML, that's all it was originally designed to do, was to mark up text and bold it and make headings out of it and, you know, format it, that sort of stuff. In recent, you know, in HTML4, of course, you know, there's people building tables and putting backgrounds and all sorts of stuff. And then you got CSS, etc., and HTML5 is around the corner for anyone who may care. There are other protocols as well, like XHTML and XML, that are also becoming quite popular. The HTTP protocol, or Hypertext Transfer Protocol, is not a secure protocol. So it can be, you know, can be seen by, you know, the traffic sent on the web page you're viewing can be seen by the users as it travels over the internet. In order to provide secure data, HTTP can be used with secure transfer protocols. And this is where you might see HTTPS in the browser. Okay, for requests for secure HTTP are sent to port 443 as opposed to port 80. Now, I seem to remember there are some test questions around. It's been a little while since I've looked into the exams. So it's good to become at least familiar with most of those ports that Jackie mentioned earlier.
The other thing of it is that if you have any eyesight at all, there's a little padlock that's usually displayed also in your browser to let you know that you're dealing with a secure server.
Absolutely. And it's usually required, you know, they set up a certificate on the server and that sort of stuff. It's been a little while since I've done one. You'll find that your bank and financial institutions are using secure
as does the Library of Congress, by the way. Just FYI.
Yeah, there you go. There's many different...
As does PayPal when you log in.
Just as well, too. I'd rather it be secure than not. Well, they're using 128-bit encryption, I guess.
I remember in Australia... 256.
Oh, okay, it's gone up again, has it? Yep, that's cool. I remember when everyone thought 40-bit encryption was good. There are many different web clients and web services available in the market. So, you know, somebody could be serving a website using Microsoft IIS or information, what's it called? IIS, what's it? Internet Information Services. And I could be down here serving a website from Apache. But they'll both be viewable in any standard web browser, and that's why standards are important. So, because they allow for different manufacturers to work together seamlessly. Okay, so just in a brief summary here, folks. One, a client uses DNS to obtain the IP address of the web service requested. Okay, a client sends a request to using HTTP to destination port 80. Three, the server sends HTML web page to client. And four, client interprets the HTML and displays the information to the user. And don't get me started on the way half these web browsers interpret that HTML. That is another saga in itself. All right, FTP clients and services. FTP stands for, folks, any idea?
File Transfer Protocol.
Thank you, Gary J. Yep, exactly right. File Transfer Protocol. And I wonder if Paul's going to drop in on us today. Do you think I should go and quickly move him down?
Say again.
Hang on.
I'm losing packets, so...
Good morning, Paul. It's Elise. We've moved you down because we noticed you popped your head in the door before and popped out again. So welcome to our lecture. We are currently through, halfway through Chapter 6, talking FTP and other protocols. All right. Okay. In addition to web services, okay, we use FTP. Now, you'll find that a lot of websites, when they've been hosted, have an associated FTP account with them. And that is so that you can transfer files up to the server if you want to put up your website. The Lonsdale Media and Cisco Vision websites do not have an FTP account associated with them for security reasons. Okay. With the file transfer protocol, it's a service that allows you to transfer files and also do file management operations on those files. For example, deleting files, renaming files, and even copying files. It's an easy method. It can be used on the command line, while most people these days use some form of graphical user interface program. A host running FTP client software can access an FTP server to, as I said before, access in particular file functions. Basically, you are exchanging files between devices, between your local computer here at home and some server. And it doesn't necessarily have to be used with a website. There are people out there, running FTP sites. Businesses may, for example, allow FTPing in of work that's done at home if people are out working in the field and need to send stuff back. Did somebody wish to mic up?
Our MIDI-MAG list has an FTP site where its users can put their music up on the FTP site and for other people to listen to. So even though we don't really have a website, we do have an FTP site. So
you can have one without the other, like I said, I'm doing. Hi, Mario. He's up in the other room. he can move down. Okay, to accomplish this happening, as Jackie mentioned before, there's port 20 and 21. One port is used for the establishment of the connection, the other port is used for the actual transfer of the material, of the files. Okay, to begin this FTP session, requests are sent to the server using destination port 21. Notice we're talking destination port here. Source ports are a bit more interesting to talk about, but the request comes out of your computer on another port. Once the session is open, the system will change to port 20 to do the actual file transfer. FTP software is built into computer operating systems and most web browsers. Yes, you can actually use Internet Explorer as an FTP client. I personally do not like doing so. I find it very clumsy. So that's why people go out and get FileZilla, and WSFTP was very common, and there's a whole raft of them out there. Are there any questions regarding FTP before we move on to, you guessed it, email clients? Okay, we're halfway through the notes, judging by the scroll bar, and halfway through our time, which is 8 o'clock Melbourne time, so we're on schedule. Email clients. Email clients are one of the most popular clients used on the internet, of course. Email servers run server software that enables them to serve email out over the network. Now, I run one here called XIM, E-X-I-M. It's a mail transport application, IMTA. There are others that are built into Linux that come out of the box, so to speak, one called SendMail, which you may have heard. What they do in Microsoft land is, to me, anybody's guess. I'm completely de-skilled in it, but it could also be managed by the IIS. I really wouldn't know. basically, each mail server receives and stores mail for the user. Now, you will find that I note it with an interest that a lot of Americans these days, and correct me if I'm wrong, are using things like Gmail and Hotmail. I'm starting to notice the amount of people who are not giving me, such and such at ISP.com is becoming less. Is this a trend over there, folks?
Yes, it is.
I would say that one of the reasons for it, Elise, is because, a lot of people travel on business and stuff like that, and it's difficult for them to, they can receive mail from their ISP, but they can't send it under those circumstances. And so in order to be able to send mail, they're taking advantage of these free these free accounts.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting observation. I think you're right, because and the ISPs block that from happening unless you start messing around with secure SSH and all sorts of weird, interesting things. And that's partly what Craig and I are trying to set up for here. I'll have to use the Gmail account when I come to your place, because unless I can get access to your SMTP server at Quest. Because if you're outside of your ISP, generally you send email out via your SMTP server provided by your internet service provider, and if you're not at home, they used to allow it, but they don't now because it's what's known as an open relay, and spammers love open relays. Right, let's digressing a bit.
My okay. ISP offers a secure SMTP, and that gets around that for me. It's pretty good.
Yes, I think we were discussing it the other week, and that's what Craig and I, to secure SMTP, and that's what Craig and I are starting to set up for me here. So I can always use the lonsdalmedia.org facilities and get back out that way, even from right the way over in Jackie's house.
Oh, I don't even hear all SMTP in mine is with Quest. I never use it.
Oh, I could probably figure it out. We could probably have a look
at it.
I could
too, but probably... I don't even know if I know my password with Quest anymore, to be honest with you.
Okay. Yes, because they're obviously running a secure system too. In Australia, as long as you're logged onto the network, if you're dialed in through dial-up or if you're on ADSL or on via cable, they just simply let you go on. You don't have to authenticate into the SMTP server to send out your messages. Jackie tells me that's not quite so in America. A lot of people have said that. So, yeah, well, we would probably need to find out the password for it. All right. Could even be the same password as what if she uses in the, you know, to get the ADSL connection, but we'll check it out. Back to the notes. All right, well, let's talk about downloading the email first rather than sending it. We sort of lost our way a bit there. Each server, each user that has a mailbox on your server must use an email client to access that email. When I first knew Kylie, she was using POP3, and she asked me about IMAP, and I said, yes, I use it, and I do believe you are using that now. Is that right, Kylie?
Yes, yeah, it's great.
All right, we'll discuss the differences as we get further down the chapter. Mail servers are also used to send mail to other email boxes and other email addresses, and this is important. They often, if I send an email here, I could send an email, say, to, a good example might be elise@lonsdalemedia.org. Jackie actually has an address here. She never uses it, but I might send an email to jackie@lonsdalemedia.org. Or jawscripting@lonsdalemedia.org. So what happens is the SMTP server, for example, checks to see if it has the address, and it goes, oh, yes, I do. So I'm going to send that message there. Bingo, it happens in a flash. If I'm sending to abletech@gmail.com, which is Jackie's, you know, popular address, it then has to go, well, we don't have that gmail.com here. We don't have this abletech here. We have to go looking out on the net for it. So it does that sort of stuff for you. In this instance, the mailbox that Jackie uses is obviously on another server, namely the Gmail People's server. Mailboxes are identified by the format user@company.domain name. That's one way of saying it. So, user@company.domain name, and usually the company is part of the domain name. So in my case, it's elise@lonsdalemedia.com.au or elise@lonsdalemedia.org, which are the same. Two domain names, but talking to the same email box, and that's a little bit outside of the scope of this lesson as to how I did that. Same as abletech@gmail.com. It's that user@domain name. Various applications in processing email. Various application protocols. Yes, we're talking about application protocols here. Various, not transport ones, so we're talking about application protocols here. Various application protocols in processing email include SMTP, POP3, and IMAP4. SMTP being the first, simple mail transfer protocol. Okay, SMTP, our simple mail transfer protocol, is used by an email client to send messages to a local SMTP server. So we click the send button. It uses SMTP on port 25 to talk to your, as Jackie and I were just discussing, the merits of Quest's internet SMTP server. I can either use TPG's SMTP server, or I can use my own one built into Endeavour, which is my new server. And when I send out messages from our Jaws scripting website, it only knows about the SMTP server that's built in, so it works and goes off rather quick. I can also, and have done, configured my Outlook Express to use my SMTP server. Why? Because I like it. And if you look at the mail headers, it says one's done at all. But that's me. Most people in their homes using TPG, or in this country, Optus or Telstra, would connect to their internet service providers, or TPGs, or Optus's, or Telstra's SMTP server, and it works just as well. Okay. Basically, that server is the SMTP server, and that decides whether the message is destined to a local mailbox, like I said before. Jackie@lonsdalemedia.org. No, it isn't, so it goes off somewhere else. That's if it's addressed to a mailbox on another server. If the server decides it has to send a message to another server, like to abletech@gmail.com, then it still uses the SMTP protocol to do that. So the servers are talking on the SMTP level. Okay, SMTP requests are sent to port 25. Yes, incidentally, for those of you who haven't already figured it out, for me to run my own mail server here and receive email at lonsdalemedia.org and lonsdalemedia.com.au, I did actually have to open up port 25 on my integrated services router, or when I installed a new server the other week, I just switched the port over from one server to the other, and it all worked like a mad thing, didn't it, Jane?
It did. Also, don't forget about secure SMTP, because that tends to run on different ports. So,
yeah, secure SMTP, which is what we're setting up. Oh, God, now you've got me, hon. Was that 995 or something? You might remember. Because that's what the Google people are using.
No, I think the SMTP is 565 or 487.
No, it's 465. 465.
465.
Yeah, 465 or 587.
Thanks, gang. There you go. 465. I know I could just go through and check it, but I'm reading the notes.
My secure SMTP uses the same port.
Yes, as does obviously all these collection of Gmail people who are fired up out there. All right. Okay, are there any questions or comments on this just before we move on to it? Silence is gone. Sorry, Paul.
Where were we before we got into FTP?
Okay, where we were, lots of interesting stuff, and I would ask that you listen to the lecture because this is a ripper lecture. We discuss things like the OSI reference model. We have actually turned the notes around a bit, Paul, so read chapter 6 and you'll find that Jackie and I decided to put the last bit first. There you go. We discussed the layered models, and I think it's important that people understand the layered models, and we've now come down to things that, I guess are a bit more commonly known. So I would advise you, Paul, when the announcement goes out later today, which it will, jump on qcat.org and grab the lecture down. All right, okay. Okay, let's have a look at POP, Post Office Protocol. This is one of the most popular, or probably still the most popular way of getting your email. A server that supports POP clients, as mine now doesn't. Actually, it does, but I've closed the port because I don't use it, so if Kylie and Jackie want it, I'll open it again. It receives and stores messages addressed to its users. Now, here's a good example. Let's talk to Kylie for a sec. What happens when an email is sent to Kylie's address? Well, her internet service provider, actually Kylie's probably a good choice because she's using iNet now, anybody. The email's client, or the email server rather, stores the messages until you come up with your Outlook Express or your Outlook or your Thunderbird and you log on and download the messages. Yes, by default, you're downloading the messages. You can switch it so that it will leave a copy of the messages on the server, and you can even switch it so that it will leave a copy of the messages on the server for a determined number of days, and that's what my friends do, their husband and wife team. One downloads the messages, but the other one might look at the mail, the email, and leave it there for their husband to get on the main computer or something. So, under normal circumstances, when the client connects to the computer, the messages are downloaded to that client. And by default, it says here in the notes, messages are not kept on the server. But as I said, you can switch that and change it if you're so inclined. These use destination port 110. I think some of these ports are in your test, so it's good to be familiar with them. Are there any questions about POP?
I would like to make a comment, though.
Yes, please, Paul.
POP for Gmail is 995.
10.4, that's right.
Right, okay, yes. I'm actually using iNet with Gmail, and I'd have to go look it up. And that is because they're using security, a lot more secure systems, so they don't use the standard 110. All right, IMAP, which is Internet Message Access Protocol, or IMAP. Okay, so this, in the same way as POP, receives and holds email for you, for its users. However, it keeps the messages in the mailbox on the server. So, I don't know how many internet service providers out there are offering IMAP, because obviously the messages live on their server and takes up room. In one of my wholesale hosting plans, I used to have that for some of my clients. They very rarely used it, but we did offer it. I'm not sure whether we are at the moment. And I use IMAP because it's my server, and I'd bundle, probably keep the mail there anyway, and it means I can access that email from any email client that connects, that, you know, that I want to have connected to it. The most current version of IMAP is IMAP 4, which listens for requests under normal conditions on port 143. Now, I find this particularly useful because the messages are left on the server. My folders, you know, down on the left-hand side of the Outlook Express or the Outlook window or the Thunderbird window, you can have your folders, are all on the server. And the reason I do that is because, with no disrespect to Windows, I don't trust it. And it's easier to run backup scripts off the server, which again made it easy for me when I transferred over. I just asked the, you know, mail directories across and up it all came. But it also means that I can do interesting things, like rather than turning my main computer on in the morning and chewing up lots of power, I can sometimes turn my Triple E PC on the dining room table as I'm having breakfast, which takes up less power, and I get to see the same email from the same server and respond accordingly without having to turn the big machine on. And that's what's going to serve me well when I'm over at Jackie's, of course. I don't have to worry about, oh, did that email download to the Triple E PC, or did it end up staying at home on the main machine? It's there for me, with, irrespective of which email client and from where I use that email client. Are there any questions about IMAP on port 143? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Most email clients these days can be either used to use POP3 or IMAP 4, so they'll pretty much do them both. Okay, email clients must also be able to send email to a server using using SMTP. Different email servers can be configured for incoming and outgoing mail. Mine's configured for both. Okay, now, if we're going to configure an email client, and I think Kylie indicated before, she has a friend in Christchurch who is in need of some assistance, so we're going to do a Jackie and Elise fix-it job on them later today.
Actually, she's sorted it out, but I'll tell you about that after.
Oh, fine, okay, so that's good. It's always good to hear that people are able to sort these things out.
Good old capture.
Oh, okay, well, we'll chat about it later. Okay, the following are typical entries on most modern-day email clients when configuring them. We need to configure POP3 or IMAP, SMTP, username slash user password, and spam and virus filters. Let's talk about these entities. Basically, I'll just elaborate because I thought the notes were going to talk about it, but essentially you are always asked a question, particularly when you install a new email client. What's your name? What's your email address? What is the name of the server you want to get your email from? So, say in my case, it's mail.lonsdalemedia.org. What is my username? So I give that. What is my password? And what is my SMTP server? Now I can either put in, as I said before, mail.tpg.com.au or mail.lonsdalemedia.org. I have the choice. Okay, and people who are configuring for Gmail have put those appropriate settings in their email clients. And you can always go to tools accounts or tools, you know, etc. to modify existing ones or to add more accounts if you so wish. Are there any questions about emails before we go into instant messaging? All right, we'll take that as a no. Instant messenger is, messaging is one of the most popular things run over the internet. I prefer to talk. I don't like typing people things, but anyway, people love texting. Okay, so we have, you know, internet, what's that one called by Microsoft? Windows Messenger or something. We used to do ICQ, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. Certainly some, yeah, probably over that. There's many different ones out there. I think Yahoo and Google now have them, don't they, folks? I wouldn't know.
Of course, Skype has it.
Well, of course, Skype has it, and we often text each other before we start a conversation to see which one's available. And they allow you to transfer files too, as does the Microsoft one. So Jackie sent me one of the early drafts of this lesson plan yesterday as we were talking through it. They can use, each messaging service can use a different destination port or protocol. Some of them require different protocols, and there are some clients out. That's often why you need a special client if you want to run multiple ones. I also just...
Can anybody hear me?
Yep, got you, Jackie.
Sure, you fine.
Yeah, did Elise drop?
Sounds that way.
It's what it appears to be.
Oh, this is not good. All right, well...
tried Skype messaging her, see if she comes back.
Okay, guys, looks like Miss Lonsdale has cratered, and so I am going to take over for the time being. Many different IM applications are available, of course, and each of these can use different protocols and destination port numbers. So, obviously, you have to have, compatible IM software on your machine in order to communicate with one another. Because oftentimes, like Google, will use different stuff than Yahoo, etc. Obviously, these applications are such that they require minimal configuration. Once the client is downloaded, all you basically have to do is create an account and configure the client with your username and password for that account, and you're usually good to go. Doing that will allow the IM client to authenticate to the network, and once logged into the server, clients can send messages to one another in real time. Oftentimes, IM supports the transfer of video and music files in addition to text messages. Sometimes these IM clients also have telephony available, which allows you to make phone calls over the internet. An example of this obviously is Skype, but there are others as well. You can also configure your IM client with things like buddy lists, etc. The one thing about IM software is that it can usually be downloaded and used on various types of devices, including computers, PDAs, and cell phones. Okay, voice clients and servers. And this is too bad that Elise is not doing this, because she actually has, VoIP software and stuff that she uses to call me with all the time. She has a thing called Engine, I believe, and she's able to do that. Making telephone calls over the internet is obviously becoming increasingly popular. Usually the technology that's used in these kinds of applications is peer-to-peer, and it's similar to that used in instant messaging. What this is voice over IP is called VoIP, V-O-I-P, and it makes makes use of...
I'm back up, by the way.
In order to carry digitized voices. Basically, what you have to do is find a company that provides a service, like my phone company, Quest, provides it.
Can I be heard, or have we got too much latency?
Yeah, no, you're good. Go ahead and take over VoIP, if you can. We've just arrived. Can you hear me, Elise?
Can you hear me?
10-4.
Okay. The very morning I didn't set the redundant system up, TPG lost the ball. So I'll establish a quick Skype connection for a sec, and I'll be back in a minute, folks. Well, then we can continue. Now, you want me to start at VoIP? I'm recording on the EEE. The very morning we didn't set the redundant system up, what happens? We needed it. What am I doing? VoIP. All right. Just let me get my recording going.
I've got one going.
Listen to this, guys. Hail.
Wow. Good on you. That'll probably need curtains for the internet service in Wellington. Okay, we talked about voice clients and service, so what was the last bit you did, Jay?
Just go with VoIP.
Making telephones over the internet is becoming increasingly popular if the internet stays up. An internet telephony client uses peer-to-peer software, such as Skype, to enable this to happen. Now, I also run a VoIP box, So, we have our voice, it gets transferred into data, and it goes out using IP on the internet. To start using internet telephones, it's a little bit like Instant Messenger. You download the client software, often referred to as a soft phone. You configure it up with the details from your provider, and you start talking. Skype is similar in the respect that it is a program that allows you to enter the details of an existing account or create a new account once installed, and you can come back up on the internet and talk. Ventrilo is also such a client. It all goes, it's a voice over IP client that connects to the Darkstar people in Perth and then disseminates lectures out to you people who are very gracious in listening to us all every week. For the internet telephone, rates can vary substantially, so you do need to be aware. It's like a mobile phone, for example. You do need to be aware of what your plan's going to be. I have a plan with a good provider here in Australia, and when I met Jackie, I upgraded it by agreeing to pay an extra $5 a month. That gives me free calls to the United States. So that also helps the cabbie too, but I generally do that on Skype, but I don't mind ringing. I think I've rung Joe on it a couple of times when I first knew him. I ring, because of voice over IP, I just ring Jackie as if she's the next door neighbour. Really, that's what I do. I just pick that up, and that's how I knew. Apparently I was off the internet, because when this thing created, I tried to get onto Jackie. She used VoIP to get back to me. She rang, I have an Arizona phone number, and she rang me on her PSDN line, on her normal phone line. That came up. Unfortunately, I had enough internet connectivity to allow Skype to have that, which gave me a clue that we might have been coming back up. With voice over IP software, the user selects a unique name so that calls can be received from other users. Jackie recently obtained a Magic Jack, and we had to configure that up with a phone number in different bits and pieces. Now, obviously, you require speakers and a microphone, and I think, respectively, everyone here has a fair idea of how that works, because we're all here on Ventrilo, and we usually go through all this, you know, stuff before a course starts, and helping people to get their audio settings right and their connection right to Ventrilo and Skype. Headset is frequently plugged into the computer so that it's easier to listen to. Well, it's saying here calls are made to other services, other people on the same services, by picking a username from the list. Well, yes, Skype is that. And here we go, we're talking about a call to the regular phone line of Public Switch Telephone Network, PSTN. Is what you can use VoIP for. In actual fact, just about every call I make out of here is on VoIP, because it's either free or very cheap. And so I can ring the Public Switch Telephone Network, be it a local call to do business on, or Jackie across the pond, or Kylie in New Zealand. In actual fact, you're going to love this one, folks. Kylie in New Zealand costs me 20 cents to ring, and she's closer. There you go, geographically closer. It depends on what the agreements are between your provider and your and whatever countries they want to let you ring into. The protocols and ports, I assume we're still on, are we? Yep. Now, the access to protocols and destination ports are often very specific depending on the type of VoIP application you're using. I had to open port 5060 on my router for me to be able to use my voice over IP properly. And often your provider will give you those details if necessary. Transport for protocols, Jay, are you up for that?
10-4.
Oh, are there any questions? Sorry.
All right, then I'll start with transport protocols. Basically, transport protocols specify how to transfer messages between hosts. The two most common protocols, transport protocols, are TCP and UDP. If an application requires acknowledgement that a message has been delivered, it uses TCP. I believe that's a test alert. An acknowledgement like this is kind of similar, in a way, to sending like a registered or a certified, you know, letter through the postal system, in which the recipient has to sign that they got this particular letter, to let you know that it was received. TCP actually goes and breaks up messages into small pieces called segments. The segments are then numbered in sequence and passed to IP protocol, which is, you know, one layer down the protocol stack, as we discussed. And the IP protocol then assembles those segments into packets. TCP actually keeps track of the number of segments that have been sent to a specific host from a specific application. And if the sender does not receive an acknowledgement within a specific period of time, it assumes that the segments were lost and then goes ahead and retransmits them. Only the part of the message that is lost is resent, not the whole message. And that helps a lot in terms of overhead. On the receiving host, then, TCP is responsible for reassembling them, the segments, and then passing them up to the application. Some examples of TCP usage are famous FTP and HTTP. Those both use TCP. In some cases, acknowledgement is not required and actually slows down data transfer. And in these cases, the more appropriate protocol is called UDP. UDP is a best effort delivery system, and it doesn't require acknowledgement of the receipt. It's pretty much like sending a standard letter through the postal system. It's not guaranteed that the letter is received, but the chances are good. Of course, you know, the check is in the mail or whatever, right?
We often call this protocol fire and forget.
Yeah, exactly.
And internet radio uses that, which I think Jackie will explain.
Yeah. Basically, this protocol is preferable to things like streaming audio, video, and voice over IP, because acknowledgements would actually slow down the delivery of the data, and that's not a good thing when you're working with intensive things like video and voiceover. Internet radio is also an example of an application that uses UDP. Obviously, you know, if a few packets or whatever is lost over the internet, you might have a slight break in the sound, but actually trying to retransmit it would cause more breaking up and slow it down and that kind of thing. So, okay, I guess, Elise, you're going to talk about IP, or Internet Working Protocol.
Absolutely. Internet Working Protocols, here we go. The most common networking protocol is Internet Protocol, or IP. Okay. IP is concerned only with the structure, routing, and addressing of packets. IP specifies how the delivery and transportation of the packets will take place. IP uses transport protocols, not application protocols, but transport protocols, to enable hosts to communicate and transfer the data. Pretty much IP is responsible for taking the formatted segments from TCP, assigning the logical addressing, and encapsulating those into packets. Are there any questions so far? That was quick. There are other protocols, which are, of course, network access protocols. Jay, you're up.
All right. Probably the most commonly used network access protocol is the Ethernet protocol. These network access protocols perform two basic functions: data link management and physical network transmissions. The data link protocols take the packets from IP and encapsulate them into the appropriate frame format for the local network. And they also assign the physical addresses to the frames, you know, the MAC addresses to the frames, and prepare them to be transmitted over the network. The standards and protocols for the physical media govern things like how the bits are represented on the media, how the signals are sent over the media, and how they are interpreted by the receiving hosts. And what implements these protocols is the network interface cards. I think we're pretty much done.
I think we are too. So there it is, folks.
Want to do the? I can do the read the quiz, and you can give the
credits
if you want.
If you, it's up to you. Yep.
Okay. What happens when part of a message using TCP is not delivered? Okay, part of a message is not delivered. A, the sender resends the entire message. B, the sender sends a request to find out what happened. C, nothing. And D, TCP does not check for errors or missing data. And E, the part of the message that is missing was retransmitted. Go now.
That would be E.
Yep, anyone who answered E is correct.
Paul, do you know how to bring your chat up? Yeah, tab to the chat button, and then you can enter your answer into the chat. Okay, now. Here's some services. They are domain name service, email, file transfer, and DHCP, and HTTP, Telnet. Okay, so here's what to do here. You can type in the name like DNS, email, FTP, DHCP, web, Telnet, okay? And here are some statements, and you're going to tell which service applies to the statement, okay? A user types in a URL and a page loads in the client browser. What service is that?
People answering. Have we got all the responses in yet? Probably not. All right, people. Great. All the people answering HTTP, you are correct.
Okay, a user uploads files to his or her website.
All people answering FTP, which is all of you, are correct.
A user requests a website by typing in its name. All right.
Everyone answering DNS, you are correct.
A workstation gets its IP address automatically. God, these guys are good.
They're pretty good. One person answered it wrong, but everybody answering DHCP is correct.
Okay. Internet protocols enable users to send messages to each other over the internet.
Can you just give a question number? I know I got lost here.
We're still on number two.
Oh, I see.
Okay, we're sending messages over the internet. We're sending messages. And the services that are available to you is DNS, email, file transfer, DHCP, web service, or Telnet. And we're sending messages over the internet.
This is getting a bit disjointed.
What messages exactly? There we go. Yeah.
I was a bit lost with that too. What messages are you talking?
I couldn't remember all the categories. That's why I was.
No, exactly. The quiz is badly written. We apologize for it. Jackie and I didn't write it.
Thank you. That's why it took so long to answer. Sorry.
The last service is a technician logs into a workstation from a remote site. Which service is that?
Everyone answering Telnet in this context is correct. SSH is also good.
Oh,
for
man,
us.
This is going to be.
I don't even know where we're at. We're at question three or what?
We're at question three.
Right. Okay, go for it.
Okay. I don't even know how to do this.
Right, we are going to skip question three because it's so badly done. Yeah, forget it. Okay, question four.
They're not designed for verbal, are they? It's the problem.
We're looking at a diagram. It's an Internet Explorer, and www.cisco.com has been typed into the address bar, and the page has been loaded. Which protocol allows you to do this, to type in www.cisco.com instead of an IP address in order to do this? Thing.
People answering DNS are correct.
All right, here we go. Another match the term with its definition. All right, the terms are HTML.
I bet you they have one of these on the test.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Okay, here are the terms. The terms are HTML, HTTP, HTTPS, web server, and web client. Now, here's our definitions. It hosts a web page. Is that a web client, a web server? HTTP.
Yep, people answering web server are correct.
Right. Requests a web page. Is that a client, a server, HTTPS? Okay.
Right. Yep, the people answering client are correct.
Okay, now, used to create web pages. Is this a client, a server, HTTP? All right, look at you guys.
Yeah, HTML, people answering HTML, and that was web client. It was defined from client before, so HTML is the one for this one. Web client was the credit for the question before.
Secure protocol that uses port 443. I shouldn't have to go over that.
Okay. Oh, look at them go, isn't it? Good, Jay. HTTPS is the correct answer that everyone got.
A protocol commonly used by a web browser. That should be pretty... Protocol. Commonly... Thank you.
HTTP is a protocol commonly used by a web browser. You are all correct.
All right. Here is... This is one of these... Oh, boy. Match the protocol.
Well, if you think it's too hard, we can skip it. I don't have a problem with that.
Let's see. All right. What we're doing is we're matching the protocol to the corresponding category. Protocol to category. So our
I think someone's on a massive delay. I'm not sure who it is.
So here it is. Okay, protocols used to process email, and your protocols are SMTP, FTP, POP3, HTTP, and IMAP4, and HTML, and DNS. Okay,
yeah,
so the question
email,
is, what are protocols that are used to process email? So there's three of them. Tell me what three protocols are used. Yep.
Right. Yep, for the people answering POP3, SMTP, and IMAP, you are correct. Anyone answering HTTP may be being confused with accessing the webmail through a web browser and that sort of stuff, so that is actually technically not correct. So you do need SMTP, IMAP, and POP3.
All right, this is a pretty easy one. What acronym is associated with making a phone call over the Internet? Is it IM, HTML, HTTP, SNMP, or VOIP?
Everybody answering VOIP or VOIP, you are fantastically and spot on correct.
All right, now here is what we're going to do. I'm going to give you a port number, and you're going to type what protocol is associated with that port number. How's that? That's just the easiest way I know of to do this. So, the first port number is 20. What is associated with that? Okay, good.
Oh, somebody's on massive delay.
All right. Port 23? What protocol is associated with
that? Oh, that was FTP port 20 for those people who are listening.
Right.
We're discussing port 23, are we?
Yep.
For the people who answered Telnet, you are correct.
All right. What about port 53?
For the people who answered DNS, you are correct.
All right. Here's a harder one. What about 68? 68. Oh, you guys are good.
Wow, they're cool. They're listening. DHCP is the correct answer for the people who typed it in. And for the people who didn't, that's fine because it's not an easy one to remember.
Now, everybody should get this one right. Port 80.
I'd say so. Port 80. We've learned and doing them. Guess what? Everybody who answered port 80, which is everybody, you are correct. And sorry for the person on delay.
And what about
question
port
before
110?
Last, right? And we've got three answers. For everybody answering POP, which is probably all of you, you are correct on port 110.
Now here's a little bit harder one. It's 161. We did give it to you though. Ooh.
Someone got it. Any more? Okay. The people who answered SNM. Hang on. I'm getting tongue tied now. Oh, God, it's hard. SNMP. You
I
are
know
correct.
It's hard. I couldn't say it either when I needed to.
You are correct at port 161. Thank you, that person. Congratulations.
And our last one. And our last one is 443.
Look at them go. Four answers are in anymore. Although we've got one person, unfortunately, on delay. So, the people answering HTTPS, you are correct. Well done, folks.
Okay, now, here's another one. And what I'm going to do, what we're looking for is we want three protocols that act on the application layer, that function at the application layer of the OSI model. So when I say the name of a protocol, if it functions at the application layer, type Y. And if it doesn't, type an N, okay? ARP, does it function at the application layer or no? God, these
people
guys
answering no, which is everybody, you are correct.
All right, what about TCP? Does it function at the application layer? God, these guys are
people
good.
People answering no, you are correct. Oh, yeah, the delay.
All right,
it
what
was
about
probably
DSL?
Right 10 questions ago.
What about DSL? Does that function at the application layer?
DSL, guys.
DSL, guys.
Digital subscriber line, of course.
Yeah, it's not even a protocol, so...
Exactly.
All right, what about FTP? FTP, does that function at the app?
Mm-hmm. It's an application protocol, so the answer is yes, it does. FTP functions at the application layer.
What about POP3?
Sorry, delay. People answering why, you are correct.
All right, what about DHCP? Ladies and gentlemen,
correct,
we are done.
You are correct.
It is correct.
Why?
And does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, you're all fantastic.
About what we've
really
presented
are.
So far. And we're 4 minutes.
Yes, you do have a question? No, the delay. We're up at 4 minutes. We can go. Any questions?
No, you did good as usual, both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nadia. Well, awesome. We can go home. Thanks, guys. It's appreciated. The feedback that we get from this is actually very much appreciated, isn't it, Jay?
Yeah, it is, you know, because sometimes, you know, we're on these things and nobody says anything and we wonder sometimes if we're actually reaching people, but I think we are, so.
It seems like it. You can all go home 5 minutes early because I'm going to have a chat to Jay. I might give her a ring and just make sure she's got a copy of that file. I'm going to do some class editing. So, because of our outage, the very day I didn't have the redundant system queued up and ready to go. Usually I do. I will next week, because if it drops, I won't even ask questions. I'll just go straight on it. So, you don't have any questions? Good on you, Paul. Well, that's good. Well, you can always talk to us off channel. I know you were trying to get hold of us the other day, so apologies for that. All right,
he
gang,
was.
You've done very, very well. Hey?
I didn't know that.
He was.
What was he trying to get hold of us?
Anyway,
oh, I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
And bid you all goodbye and say thank you very much for attending. It's been fantastic to have you with us. Next week is a wireless chapter.
I didn't know Telnet was 23.
Well,
you didn't? Well,
something.
You do now. There you go. Somebody's learned something. Wacko!
I didn't know Telnet is 23.
Well, like we said, Paul, you do now. And there's tables here. I'll have to Google up port numbers and stuff on the internet, and you'll get a plethora of websites that tell you all this. So, I think it's obviously mentioned in the notes because Jackie and I have, you know, based today's lecture on the notes, even though we turned it upside down. So, look, please, Paul, get down the lecture. Get down today's lecture, and that goes for everybody. And even get down lectures from other instructors too. They may present it differently, so you can enjoy.
It's not in the notes. It'll be in the diagram descriptions itself. So, you want the notes with the diagram descriptions already in, ideally, and they'll be in there.
Cool. Is there anything else from you, Magic Jay?
No, you too.
All right, gang. Love you lots. See you all next week for Chapter 7, which is wireless.
Bye now.
Bye. Bye.